What is to be done about affordable, quality healthcare in Missouri? That's the question in this special edition of Statehouse Blend Missouri. From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. Few issues have occupied as prominent and contentious a spot on the national political stage over the last decade as healthcare. It's a political hot button in every state. That's especially true in Missouri. It's not just about politics. Debates in the General Assembly, actions by past and present governors, the oversight of regulatory agencies, all that results in real impact on people's lives. Some parts of Missouri's population are disproportionately affected and vulnerable. So what happens with all that politics in Missouri? What's the reality that Missourians are facing? Today, Statehouse Blend Missouri takes a deep dive into healthcare and what can and should be done. We recorded this episode live in Kansas City's Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church. Joining us are Representative Lauren Arthur. She's a Democrat from Kansas City North, and the ranking Democrat on the House Health and Mental Health Policy Committee. Representative Arthur, welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. And Senator Ryan Silvey, he's a Republican from Kansas City North, a member of the Senate Health and Pension Committee. Welcome to you, Senator Silvey.
Thank you for having me.
And also the Reverend Dr. Vernon Howard. He's pastor at St. Mark Union Church here in Kansas City and president of the Greater Kansas City Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He's been actively engaged on this issue for a long time. Welcome to you, Dr. Howard.
Brian, thank you.
And I want to start with you, Dr. Howard. You were among the Medicaid 23, as they are sometimes called. They were 23 folks who were arrested in the Senate gallery about 3 years ago, demonstrating for Medicaid expansion. That was more than 3 years ago, but in some ways, not much has changed. Missouri remains one of 19 states that has not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, so it's leaving federal dollars on the table that could provide health care for Missourians. My question to you, Dr. Howard, is even as the U.S. Senate is debating tonight a bill that would potentially undo the Affordable Care Act by ending the individual mandate, how important is expanding Medicaid in Missouri?
Still remains extremely important. You are correct. 23 clergy persons, including myself, were arrested for engaging in peaceful, nonviolent, direct action, civil disobedience. It was in May of 2014. It was some 4 years after the signing into law of the ACA, as we know, Obamacare. And during that four-year period, the state legislature had refused to receive those funds to aid and assist, particularly poor people and working poor who could not afford the same quality of health care that legislators themselves or that professionals in the broader community do enjoy. And so in May of 2014, it was just prior to the ending of the session. As clergy persons, we felt it a moral responsibility for us to elevate and escalate the issue of the lack of, I believe, justice and equity with respect to the provision of health care. And that was based on a principle. We believe that adequate health care and equal access to health care should not be a privilege for some, but a right for all. And that is a moral principle that we embrace and is the reason why we were willing to engage in civil disobedience then, and we continue to advocate for it now.
Senator Silvey, the Senate didn't vote to expand Medicaid. That's unlikely to happen in the current environment in Jefferson City. Why is that? Why is Medicaid expansion something that that legislators in Missouri have not been supportive of?
You know, I think it's a couple things. I think politics, first and foremost. You know, during that time in 2014, I actually had a plan to expand Medicaid, which was the only Republican proposal to do so. Politics is what killed it. But also education.
Can you say more about that? How did politics kill it? What's politically unsavory about providing more health care, as Dr. Howard would say?
Sure. So, I mean, look, we live in a day of sound bites, right? I mean, we govern by sound bites, unfortunately, in a lot of places. And really what it had come down to was President Obama was not popular in the state of Missouri. Not that he wasn't popular in certain places in Missouri, but statewide he was not popular. And the proposal was branded Obamacare, and it was not popular. So you had a bunch of people in my party that just wouldn't touch it. Because even though Republican leaders across the country, you know, Governor Kasich in Ohio, then Governor Pence in Indiana, which I think is so ironic, were finding ways to move forward in a conservative fashion, but with the expansion of Medicaid, we just weren't willing to talk about it really in Missouri.
Let me ask Representative Arthur, you were not in the legislature at that time, and yet you're now part of a Democratic caucus that in theory supports expanding Medicaid but doesn't really have the votes to accomplish that. Do you share Dr. Howard's view that this is a matter of sort of basic rights, that people should have health care as a basic human privilege?
I completely agree with that. That's actually the first thing I wanted to say, is that I believe that affordable health care is a basic human right. And I think most Americans agree with that now. In terms of it playing out as a reality in Missouri, I'm not sure that that's always the case. We still have hundreds of thousands of people who are uninsured. We have hundreds of thousands of people who are underinsured, which basically means that maybe you have insurance, but you can't afford the actual health care. And the number one reason that people file for bankruptcy, any guesses? Medical debt. And so it's a real problem. For nerds like me, the Commonwealth Fund is an organization that publishes state scorecards. And it ranks states based on their quality and access of healthcare. Missouri ranks 37, which is not great. In fact, I'd say it's quite bad. And in order for Missouri to take over the number one spot, we would need 318,280 more adults to be insured. We'd see 40,701 fewer emergency room department visits. And I was shocked to learn that there are over 2,000 deaths that are where people die prematurely for causes that could be prevented or could be treated. So we have a long way to go.
Dr. Howard, you were trying to jump in there.
I was. I think that Mr. Silvey's comments were correct in terms of the political analysis, and President Obama, then President Obama, being unpopular at the time, I would say, and not go far into the weeds about why he was unpopular, because there are racial undertones that are underneath that unpopularity, if you will. Broader, though, motivating the legislature, it is my opinion, is that there is this kind of callousness and a kind of mercilessness, if you will, with respect to policy in the state of Missouri and broader in the nation with respect to economic issues and wellness of poor people.
Let me ask Senator Silvey about that, and I'm not asking you to defend the position of colleagues that you actually disagree with on this issue. But,
thank you for that.
and I understand that. But I mean, you also are colleagues and friends with these folks. Is it callousness? Is it a disregard for human welfare? Or, what is the legitimate policy position at stake here?
So I started off with saying it was politics and lack of education. And I think, in my opinion, you know, working with these folks, it's the lack of education that leads to the perception of callousness, right? Because a lot of times, the irony of this whole thing is, you know, our legislative breakdown is rural Republicans dominate right now. From a numeric standpoint, they dominate. But in many of their districts, it is, they have some of the poorest districts in the state where some of the most people are on these programs. So I'm not sure why there's a disconnect there, but they don't seem to quite grasp that or understand that. And I think that there is a perception, and maybe this would go towards the perception of callousness, particularly when it comes to Medicaid expansion, because of the population that we were talking about, which were working poor adults, they have this sense that they shouldn't need the help if they're working. So, I mean, I think it's a lack of education in a lot of respects.
Representative Arthur, you're one of, I think, two Democrats on a committee called the Interim Committee on Stabilizing Missouri's Health Insurance Markets.
I was afraid you were going to ask me about this.
What in the world does that committee do?
Well, it's a new committee, and so we're not quite sure. I think they're looking at ways that we can stabilize Missouri's health insurance market. Reinsurance is one of the ideas that we're exploring currently. But right now, it's in the early stages where I think we're trying to build on background knowledge.
So the committee's held a couple of hearings now.
I've missed both hearings. I was not on the committee for the first one, and the second one was today, so I couldn't be there for that.
Well, we're glad you're here with us in any case. I read that the chair of that committee, Republican Justin Hill from Lake St. Louis, did raise the possibility of waivers, which Senator Sylvie mentioned reinsurance, this idea of sort of backing insurers who are willing to absorb potentially higher costs from more riskier pools. It sounds like it's functioning on a bipartisan basis. Is that your perception?
Yeah, so far I think they've looked for input from both parties, but like I said, it's still pretty early on. So I'm not sure what the end result will be, whether it's task force recommendations or if it's actual legislation or maybe budgetary ideas.
There are three insurance companies offering health plans on the exchanges in Missouri, but two of those plans raised their premiums this year, 36% and 42%. What realistically are the prospects for those who are not getting insurance through their employer? Is it sustainable to imagine that healthcare is going to continue to be available, affordable for low-income Missourians, as any of you see it?
I think the possibility of repealing the individual mandate is really threatening and catastrophic for affordability of healthcare in Missouri. And there are a number of things that would go along with that tax reform that would result in pretty dire consequences for Missourians. They're already talking about if there's a hole blown through the budget, which everyone expects to happen as a result of this legislation, that the immediate cuts would be both Medicare and Medicaid. So I think this is a long-term problem that we're going to have to fight against.
All right. We've got some questions from the audience. If you would, just say your name when you get up to the microphone, and then go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you. Dennis Taylor from Independence, Missouri. Could the panel speak to the Children's Insurance Program?
Children's Health Insurance Program, known as CHIP. Go ahead.
We actually have one of the more generous in the country when it comes to children. It's one of the areas we actually do well. We go to 300% of poverty level on that, which to contrast for the working poor, it's like 17% of the poverty level.
Remind us what CHIP is.
The Children's Health Insurance Program. It's the federal program that we participate in, basically Medicaid for kids. But we do go up to 300% of poverty level on that, so there are a lot of people who can't get Medicaid themselves, their kids will still be covered.
Do you, Representative Arthur, or you, Dr. Howard, agree that that Missouri is doing well when it comes to providing help for lower-income children in Missouri?
It's day 60, and Congress still hasn't reauthorized the program. So that's the biggest problem. Missouri is a little better off than other states in that we could sustain the program through March, as I understand it. So at least there is some cushion, but I think the inaction on the part of our elected officials in Washington, D.C. is pretty unacceptable.
Dr. Howard, I'm curious, what we're hearing from both of our state legislators is that some of the problem is at the federal level. Are you satisfied that the federal, let me ask that differently. Do you agree that the federal government is primarily responsible for a lot of the problems facing Missouri healthcare?
Well, I don't see our layers of government, federal, state, and local, so perforated in that way. I see them more working in a layered kind of fashion and intertwined with each other. And so for me, I think that there are some things we can do on the local level. For instance, it was mentioned that the opposition against President Obama was a motivation for not moving forward with expanding Medicaid. Yet Mr. Obama hasn't been president for an entire year. I mean, we've had 12 months, if that's the case, if there's real political will for the state of Missouri to expand Medicaid, has not done it, even though it would benefit those rural citizens in the areas that I spoke of. Why would an individual in Emma or Mayview or Blacksburg or anywhere else in Missouri not vote or not advocate for continuing ACA and for expanding Medicaid when it will allow them healthcare offices and hospitals and doctors in their own local communities? It must be because they are hoodwinked and bamboozled, and there is a kind of racial division and racial divide that they are being tempted to buy into, that if in fact we can see ourselves as in opposition to others, we are now better than them. And that's a falsehood that should be broken in the minds of our brothers and sisters in rural areas. And it causes, I believe, them not to vote in their own self-interest or for people that really advocate for their interest.
If I could just jump in there for a second. I mean, as someone who has advocated for Medicaid expansion, I think that when it comes to why we didn't do anything this last session, I mean, if you remember, during this entire last session, the discussion in Washington was that the whole thing was going to get repealed. So nobody was in the mindset that we should jump into a program that we didn't know was even going to be there the next week. And when it comes to Medicaid expansion, so if we go back next session and it looks like they've left healthcare completely behind, and ACA is going to stay in place, and Medicaid expansion match is going to stay in place, there's probably a better chance to have that conversation. But when day to day, you don't even know if it's going to be there. That nobody was going to commit the state to several hundred million dollars.
When you say a better chance, though, do you actually think if the current effort in the Senate to repeal the individual mandate fails, do you really think that the Republican-led House and Senate and the Republican governor would support Medicaid expansion?
Probably not. But here's the thing, though. I mean, I'm a numbers guy, and when you can show that the numbers work, you can at least have the conversation. And that's what we were doing in 2014. We were having that conversation about how the numbers would work, how you would, we get a 40% match, and how you could cost shift a lot of that to other programs because they're part of the expansion community. As long as we know that those federal numbers are not going to change, you can have that conversation. But if you think those numbers are going away, nobody's going to have that conversation. We're going to talk about other stuff.
Let's go to another question.
Hi, my name is Paula Fulkerson, and I'm a nurse at the local children's hospital, and I'm here representing myself, I just have to say that, and not the hospital. But I appreciate your guys' time tonight to come, and I know I've talked with Senator Sylvie on a number of occasions and in Jefferson City, and I really appreciate your willingness to work across the lines and to try to do what you think's right, even if it's not popular. I mean, I really respect that a lot.
Thank you.
But having said that, I know that we're at risk, you know, for having Medicaid expansion is we're at risk for losing the Affordable Care Act, and I assume if they vote to eliminate the individual mandate that we won't be having any more conversations about Medicaid expansion. Is that correct, do you think?
I would say it's likely if the funding is in question at all from the federal level. I mean, the thing that makes it from a fiscal standpoint at all attractive to Republicans is the match. If the match isn't going to be there, I think it's probably very difficult to have that conversation. And if the individual mandate is what funds the match, then I think you could draw that conclusion.
Yeah. So that makes total sense. I just wanted to say, you know, and I've said it to you, and I think there's a lot of misinformation. I know you are aware, but many people think whenever I talked about the Affordable Care Act that everybody can get insurance through the exchanges. And that's why there's Medicaid expansion, because if you don't make about $15,000 a year, you can't even apply for the exchanges at all. You're not allowed to, because Medicaid expansion was supposed to fill in that gap. And our kids, whenever they turn 19, about 50% of the kids that are at Children's Mercy are on Medicaid, and they lose their insurance the day they turn 19. And I think that there's a huge disparity, first of all, in general, related to insurance, but especially for these kids that are 19 to 26, if their parents have commercial insurance, then they have insurance. They can be on their parents' insurance, just like my son can, who's still in college until he's 26. But for kids who have Medicaid, they're expected to pull up their bootstraps and be able to provide insurance for themselves the day they turn 19. And I think that's a huge disparity. And so, as I told you privately a few weeks ago, I'd really love to entertain the idea, if we do continue to have the Affordable Care Act, to even consider a compromise where we have a parity bill that maybe would cross party lines, where kids can have Medicaid expansion through age 26, just like kids who have parents that have commercial insurance, as some kind of a compromise or a place to start. Although, of course, I would be for expansion for everybody. And I just, you know, Montana passed it, a year or so ago. I just don't understand why we can't get there. But is that something that you would still be willing to entertain if we still have the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that if a child with parents who have insurance is afforded that, I don't see why someone in the foster system or someone who isn't in that situation shouldn't be afforded the same thing.
Right. Go ahead, Dr. Hart.
I'm sorry, but I just can't find a piece within myself to give the state legislature a pass like this in terms of the factor of a match. For 6 years, between 2010 and 2016, there was no threat of the taking away of the ACA. For those years, the U.S. Congress Republicans threatened that they would do it once Obama was out of office. They knew they did not have the power to do it for those 6 years. There was no threat of Obamacare leaving for between 2010 and 2016. They couldn't wait. They were biting at the chops for a new president so that they could have the actual cooperation to get this done. That just doesn't sit well with me. There's something wrong with that picture. But I would say this, that going forward, one of the things that I believe is the problem both locally here in the city and the state is we don't sometimes get into close proximity to the people that are hurting and suffering as a result of these policies. We don't see the suffering and the pain. We're not with the elderly and the poor children and those that are without health care. We don't know what it's like to stay in TMC and have them send you home, not because it's the best thing to do sometimes, but because you don't have the kind of insurance that somebody else does. We don't know. We don't know that pain. We don't know that suffering of leaving the hospital earlier or having a different kind of treatment for the same medical problem, and yet you don't get the benefit of that treatment because your health care is of a lesser quality. It's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. And we are not acquainted with that kind of suffering.
While we're talking about Medicaid, I want to ask Representative Arthur, who is the treasurer of the State Democratic Party, that you rolled out this healthcare plan. It included this interesting proposal related to Medicaid that I'm not sure I totally understand. It was a proposal that would allow people in the state of Missouri to buy Medicaid coverage at cost, at actuarial cost, is what the plan said.
It's that idea of buying in. The same.
How would that work? I mean, who would determine that cost? And practically speaking, what would that cost be in relation to other forms of insurance?
To be honest, I don't know the actual logistics of how it would work, but I think it would be more affordable than some of. I think it would both be for people who would fall within that Medicaid expansion gap, And it would be more affordable than what they could get on the exchanges.
Obviously, these Democratic plans were designed to start a conversation,
right.
Even with limited influence in what will pass the General Assembly. But are there other states that are doing something like that?
There are Medicaid for All legislative proposals in other states. I don't know that anything has passed.
Okay, interesting. Other questions from our audience?
I'm sorry. My name is Lynn, and I'm from Chillicothe in Livingston County, so I'm probably the lone rural person here. And I really appreciate what you said about building coalitions. It pains me desperately, coming from rural Missouri, to see the ugliness that is out there. The very things that the Heritage Foundation put forward to kill Clinton Care however many years ago were suddenly awful, terrible, no good, and very bad when it was incorporated into Obamacare. It pains me to see the urban-rural divide that I think rural Missouri creates. I don't think urban Missouri is creating that. And I do agree with you that that's a wedge issue.
Yes. So I'll say I agree that Democrats had abandoned rural areas for a long time. And we now recognize how devastating that's been, not just to us as a party, but to the state of Missouri. I know this year the Democratic Party, the state party, has held listening tours across the state of Missouri in both cities and in rural parts of the state. I'm not sure if they went to Chillicothe or not, but they had listening sessions, they had town halls, and then that formed the basis of the platform of our state party. So the ideas we gathered there from different parts of the state became the platform for the state party. So we are making an effort. I think it would be helpful if you and I talk after about ways that we can make sure that people are hearing that we're doing these things and spreading the message that we're traveling, we're listening, and we're trying to hear from everyone.
Senator Sylvie,
I guess I would also like to have moderate Republicans
indeed, and let me
being
ask,
part of that, not just one or the other.
Yeah.
Senator Sylvie, when there have been bipartisan things happening in the General Assembly the last few years, you've often been part of them as a Republican. How, to answer that question, how do you build coalitions around issues that are not necessarily a partisan concern? What makes that work?
Sure. Well, I appreciate it. First of all, let me say welcome from Chillicothe, by the way. It's fascinating to see you come all the way down here. My whole Sylvie family is from Chillicothe, believe it or not. My and my great-grandfather helped build the Ben Bolt Theater. So I've got Chillicothe roots as well. So I was born down here, but that's where my grandparents are from. You know, Senator Bond has been a real mentor to me. He was the first person that I worked for out of college, and he told me that nobody has a monopoly on solutions. Okay? No person, no party, nobody. So when it comes to building those coalitions, you just have to, first of all, be willing to talk to people. Okay? In the legislature, there are people who will not talk to people on the other side of the aisle. But that's where those of us that are willing to do that go in and try to mediate those things. And if they won't talk directly, there's got to be somebody in the middle to carry that message. And that's what I try to do. And I try to work with others to make those coalitions bigger. So it's not just me. Senator Jason Holzman is my colleague from south of the river who's on the Democratic side of the aisle. And we are very close in building those coalitions.
Dr. Howard, you know, often, as a minister myself, I know that often there is a conflict or a tension between ministers seeking to be prophetic, to say this is what's true, or pragmatic, this is how we get stuff done. And sometimes those things feel like they're in tension with each other. How do you see people in public policy settings bridging the gap between those things, trying to do the right thing but also getting things done when there's disagreement?
Well, I can cite examples of where we were able to come together. When I say we, SCLC and St. Mark Church and a host of other organizations within our coalition to achieve two petition initiative victories right here in Kansas City, one on April the 4th, which was the One City Economic Development Project, a 1/8-cent sales tax that would go to the reinvestment and redevelopment of the poorest of the poor neighborhoods here in the city of Kansas City, Missouri. That was interesting because it would directly, primarily impact in a positive way, mostly people of color and some poor whites. Nevertheless, north of the river, we did not win the entire vote, but enough people north of the river said yes, and it was probably my friend here, one of them, who said yes. At least I hope he voted for One City. I hope he did. Nevertheless, it is true that there can be coalitions that are beyond race, that are beyond socioeconomic strata, that are even beyond political party. We were able to do that in the city of Kansas City, Missouri, for victories in April 4th and also on August 8th for the SCLC living wage ordinance that, of course, the Missouri General Assembly came in behind and outlawed. Nevertheless, there have been public agencies and businesses and entrepreneurs who have come forward and said, we believe it's the right thing to do. And so even though the legislature has preempted it, we're going to do it anyway. It is easier to have these kinds of victories in a city where persons are working together in the same place, living together in the same neighborhoods, traveling within the same infrastructure of different races, of different class, of different social orientation. When we get to some of the rural areas, there is such isolation sometimes. There is such lack of exposure socially to anyone else that is different than what you may be. I don't know how to get around that. I do know, though, that there is hope for America. Because, and here's the reason why. I believe this onslaught that we are seeing under this current president of being the mouthpiece of religious and racial disintegration and separation. And he is that, without a doubt. He is the embodiment of hatred and the embodiment of speech that separates us, divides us, and breaks us apart. I believe it is a last-ditch effort of those who would seek to separate this country by race and by gender and by geography and economic prosperity. Here's what I believe, that in the next 3 to 4 to 5 years, we're going to see an America rise up that combats this kind of hatred, this kind of imperialist ethos, and we're going to see that what is really underneath the American foundations is the love and brotherhood and sisterhood and economic parity that we long for. And I believe this is the last ditch effort of that opposition that does not want us to see us come together as a country. We are on our way. We need to hold out. We need to hold on. Embrace the principles of fairness, of democracy, of voting enfranchisement, not disenfranchisement. And we're going to see that just beyond the horizon, there's America that's going to rise up, and we're going to embrace these principles. I believe that with all of my heart.
All right. So as we come to the end of our time, two observations I'd make. We could go on a long time. We haven't come to resolution, which speaks to the complexity of the healthcare challenges facing Missouri. And secondly, the reality is that we've talked about a lot of things besides healthcare, because healthcare is so intertwined with other issues, issues of taxation, issues of addressing economic inequality more broadly, that tells me that we will continue to talk about healthcare and those other issues in the coming legislative session and probably beyond. I want to thank our guests, invite you to thank Representative Lauren Arthur, Democrat, Senator Ryan Silvey, a Republican, and Reverend Dr. Vernon Howard of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
This episode was recorded live on November 30th at Kansas City's Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church. Thanks to the church and Pastor Wallace Hartsfield for all their help in making that possible. Statehouse Blend, Missouri is a production of KCUR Studios. We had help this week from Mike Russo, Chris Young, and Ron Jones. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and tell your friends to do the same. We're wherever you get your podcasts and also on the NPR One app. Also, follow me on Twitter. I'm at PTSBrian. You can also drop me an email, brian@kcur.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you next time.